You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good,
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's House of Cards After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's House of Cards After Show.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, AfterBuzzers, and welcome to the season finale of the second season of Netflix original series, House of Cards, starring Kevin Spacey. Oh my goodness, this episode was entitled Chapter 26. I'm your host, Thaddeus Massey. It didn't get any juicier than, I don't know what to say, but I'm joined with two beautiful ladies right now. Introduce yourselves.
Hey everyone, I'm Sophia Stanley.
Hey guys, it's Emma Kay.
And I sound like a creeper because Frank Underwood just crept his way into the frickin' White House. How did this guy manage to pull this off? I mean, we saw it, but the fact of the matter is, where we saw where it was going and how it was going there, I wasn't sure that they were going to make it believable for me, and they totally pulled it off.
Well said.
They totally pulled it off and made it believable for me because we knew what the end goal was at one point, and now we're like, come on, are we really going to – is he really going to be able to make this happen? And then the way he manipulated the whole system of circumstances and got himself there, it was totally believable. The writers killed this season. I wasn't sure that this season could possibly be better than next season. I mean, I'm sorry, than the first season. But you gotta kind of think, when he tosses Zoe Barnes in front of the train the very first episode, you're like, oh, wow, this is really a lot of good stuff is going to happen this season. So,
however, I think this is even more of a testament to the writing on the show, that there was a part of me that felt the opposite, i.e. that if you kill off what we perceive to be a main character in the first 30 minutes of the first episode of season two,
right,
that was the climax, that was the height of it,
right?
That you kind of can't get better, or you've now gotten used to that level of viciousness,
yeah,
that level of there's no rules. So now you're expecting the unexpected, which is different than what happened, wherein, just like you said, we saw where the end goal was,
yeah,
but we were still surprised in a believable manner. And at the very end, no matter whether or not you love Frank or you hate Frank, there was part of you that was like, well done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was like, good job, well, right. young lad. Good job, young chap.
Francis.
Right, Francis, good job. I'm proud of you, young lad. Oh, goodness.
But we can't fail to mention that with the victory comes his great help and his partner in crime, who has helped him tremendously get to that point. So he was not in it alone.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't in it alone. And he definitely cannot be... or not have accomplished this level of success, I should say. I mean, it's success, but I guess that's another
this is a victory. For him.
It is a battlefield for him, and it's a victory. I mean, one thing I want to ask the listeners to chime in on this or whatever. Do you guys feel that Frank, and I think we talked about this, is he really serving self? We think he's self-serving. Do we really feel like, is he going to take advantage of the position to do good? Because that's why he really wants to be there? Because he really feels like, because he's so self-righteous in such a way that he wants to be in that, he can actually only do, he's the only person that could do the best good for the people
and
if he's there.
One thing that I do have to mention is he became president by the end of season two. So what else do they have in store for us? I'm like thinking, is he going to be like, go for international, like UN power, something. I don't know what he's going to do, but I'm sure he's not settling with this. And this is just the beginning of his building his dynasty.
But that is a very good question. However, we have to remember that, again, we're kind of in present time. So it's 2014. In 2 years, 2016, there's going to be a vote.
Uh-huh.
So he actually has to get elected by the populist vote. So I feel like that, theoretically, in terms of the timing, will be the next battle that he's going to have to win. So before, when, to a certain extent, he didn't have to, or he didn't care about public perception.
Right.
He literally only had to maneuver the pawns that were available to him. Now he actually has to make sure that the public is a pawn, similar to how they were in season one, but on a greater scale, because now everyone's looking at him.
Right.
Before, no one was. So for us, the normal, you know, American citizenry, a majority whip, it's like, okay, who cares?
Right.
And I don't mean that to be disrespectful, but I mean it's
just in the
that
public eye.
In
just,
the public eye, we're not really following or watching.
Right.
Arguably, you can even say to a certain extent the same thing about the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual president of the United States of America, now we're all going to be watching in a completely different way. And I have so many predictions, because I also think that there is
We can talk about predictions.
There's
all
also a scandal that I think was alluded to two episodes ago before the scandal broke with Adam. When Claire basically paused and she goes, do you think it is?
Uh-huh.
And he goes, no. But they didn't mention it. And to me, to not mention it doesn't make sense how this show goes. They would have gone, Adam, so that we know what they're talking about. The fact that they didn't and alluded to, no, there's something else that we're not aware of.
That's interesting.
You don't think it had anything to do with Zoe?
No, I really don't. And I agree. I agree, but I still feel like there was something planted that was literally like something we're not aware of.
Well, we see, you know, he's obviously already on the right foot. This guy had this whole thing planned. He took some very, very, very calculated risks, and he could have got his head chopped off in the process, figuratively speaking. But he already set it up where being able to recruit Catherine Durant to side with him was extremely crucial to how this whole thing played out, because she's the one who had to get Fang to turn and to confess that there was a money laundering scheme to begin with, and then grant him asylum. And he automatically, Frank is already starting off on the right foot by giving Fang up and rescinding his asylum as soon as he becomes president. So that automatically is like correcting a wrong done by the impeached president, you know, who fell from grace, and now he's going to come in and save the day. He's already starting off with that, the very first act.
And basically preventing war.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's not just cleaning up. It's actually what the action is that we potentially may have to lose lives. So he has now prevented it, like, whether or not Japan was going to go to war with China or vice versa, and then we would have to get involved.
Yeah.
But he saved American lives in his first action as president within, like, what? Literally 30 minutes.
Like a minute.
Like, you know what I mean? Well, yeah, true.
Right.
I'll give it, like, 30.
Right.
You know, it does raise a lot of, eyebrows. I'm not going to say a lot, but for people who are watching him, Isla mentions when Seth is giving the speech, the press, for the news and what's going on, and one of the reporters says, well, he moves quickly or fast, and Isla says, oh, with China or with Walker?
Right.
So even though he is impressing everyone else, the main people that are able to somewhat read through him, it's going to trigger for them to go deeper and dig deeper to find out, well, how did he do all of this so fast?
So quickly. I mean, certain people that are sniffing things out, like Ayla Sayad and like the special prosecutor Dunbar, who we know are going to be thorns in his backside coming next season. That's like obvious. So I'm looking forward to seeing where the writers are going to take us as far as that's concerned. Like what happened with Zoe. You know, we were talking about just how they started off and got rid of that main character. we remember they title every episode mm-hmm. like a book. So it's like one continuous story, which is really cool because they don't really, if you go to a lot of, if you watch a lot of like series, they leave gaps. Mm-hmm. This show, these writers haven't really left any gaps. It's like they pick up right where they left off mm-hmm. and continue. And everything is done intentionally, like we were saying. There's no scenes that are done in vain or anything like that. So,
and what I also appreciate from the writers is the fact that they don't drag on with the story. In season one, you know, we've seen important information that has unfolded. Season one, he becomes vice president. Season two, he becomes president. So with the viewer and the fact that the episodes are released so soon, you don't become bored,
right.
just like a TV series you would, because you just feel like things are dragged out so long because they need to keep viewers watching the show. But with this, you know, you mentioned in the previous episode that you don't mind waiting a year to watch the next season because you are given, you feel like you're given enough information to feed off of right. and to start making predictions for the following season.
Plus, there's only 13 episodes on top of that. So that actually helps us not like the traditional old school 20 something episodes.
True. I also think, I agree with both of you, but I also think that what's amazing about this show is it has so many different layers, mm-hmm. right? So you can watch it, let's say, and sit back and do it purely for entertainment, right. right? And have no knowledge of government, no knowledge of strategy, no knowledge of, in essence, war, right? right? And just watch it for pure entertainment, and it's an amazing show. You can then, all of those subsets that I said, you can watch it for that. You can watch it for from a political, as a political drama. You can watch it as basically war games.
Right.
And I feel like, for me, I personally can't, like, the minute we're done, I definitely probably next weekend will do another binge marathon.
Yeah.
Because I feel like every single time I watch an episode, I learn something new, number one. Number yeah. two, mm-hmm. I think that seeing them again in their totality, after it's sunken in, like, everything that they've done, you see something else. So, yeah. again, I think that there is something brilliant that Netflix has done. Not only, obviously, that it's an original series, you know, on, quote-unquote, a new platform.
Right.
But the fact that they're all available, so that whether or not you binge-watch, I know some people do the opposite. I, last season one, literally watched as we did these, as we did the after shows,
right.
and kind of watched it, quote-unquote, more like traditional TV. This year, I watched it like that until I think episode 3, and then I binged. But there is something to be said about the fact that, like, I, as the viewer, am in control of how much I consume and
right.
how much I get sucked in.
Plus, right. I think the viewer age range is so wide with the show that it was really unpredictable. You have everyone, you know, probably from the age of even 16, 17 to...
There are a lot of young viewers, you know, for the show as well. Okay. Yeah.
Older
there,
people watching.
Oh, yeah.
Sakina, Jeffrey, Linda, you mentioned in an article that she did that her kids' friends are coming in and asking her political questions that she's, you know, really surprised. But it is sparking interest in the viewers, the citizens, to want to find out what is going on, because to us, politics is somewhat boring. But looking at, you know, what's going on, you're kind of like, oh, okay, well, I didn't know that happens like that. You know,
right.
I didn't know that happens.
It's educational.
So it is very educational, and they're going to have, I think their viewership is going to be growing by the season.
I also think the timing of this show is spot on, because I agree with you in theory, but from a practical perspective, I actually think that politics is officially part of pop culture. I think there was a time
definitely.
When
oh, yeah.
you could literally say, well, I'm not into politics. That's literally so last century.
Right.
And I don't mean to be flip when I say
no.
that.
Right.
But arguably, you can say it started from Clinton, right? Clinton was, I would say, like...
But that's the...
Just let me kind of finish my thought. Clinton was kind of what I consider to be the first popular president. Like, even in terms of going on the talk show circuit and playing a saxophone.
I would go further back.
You would go to Kennedy?
Well,
he
was a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but just for this generation,
uh-huh.
so to speak, I would kind of go to Reagan, because Reagan was an actor and they played on that a lot during his campaign.
I can't do that. I can do Bush. Sorry. Obviously, you can
Bush?
See where my political affiliation runs. Yes, I can't do Reagan. That's me not being objective. So Clinton,
okay.
do you know what I mean? Then Bush W. And I think, no, but arguably, because even though a lot of people make fun of his intelligence, his ratings were what they were because people felt like he was actually their friend.
Right.
That they could actually have a beer with him. And then to round it all out is President Barack Obama.
Right.
both him and Michelle are interacting with us as the normal citizen in a way that's never been done before, where whether or not it's rock the vote or get out the vote, people are aware that it's cool to vote, it's cool to be active, mm-hmm. and if anything, it's uncool not to be.
Right.
So I think the timing of the show we're in before, you wouldn't have necessarily, quote unquote, pitched it as a political drama.
Right.
Now that's actually enticing because it's part of pop culture and it's part of what we're talking about. Political topics now trend similar to traditional pop culture topics.
Yeah.
So I think the timing of it in terms of what's going on in real life is spot on, even in terms of their storylines that we talked about.
Yeah, everything.
China, you know, China potentially annexing a part of Japan.
Right.
Same thing. Crimea, Russia, the Ukraine.
Exactly.
It's so perfect.
It's so now.
It's so perfect.
And Emma mentioning, you know, speaking of Sakina Jaffrey, I wasn't sure when we were going to see Linda Vasquez again. And Linda is back in the mix. You know, Garrett needs her help. And he summons her to the Oval Office to help him out. I mean, just looking how this whole thing played out, you have to admire how she bounced at the right time, you know, submitted her resignation and recognized Frank for who and what he was. And it was like, there's no way I can compete with this. Yeah. And I don't, you know, just I think you have to think that she thought even further ahead and saw what a disaster that was going to be.
Great point.
And she was right. So she would have fallen she would have gone down with the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And that sucks. But what's really sad also is how Walker he fell back into his old ways. Just not trusting himself because somebody wrote you a letter and, you know, that was the ultimate
but
brain.
Because he put the front stamp at the end.
But not only that, though, and I'm just going to piggyback off what you said, and it's something that you said last episode that literally has been churning in my head, and it's brilliant. It's that Frank was unfaithful to him.
Yeah.
If you really look at it that way, and not in a sexual way, but in terms of actual, let's assume that they're in a relationship, right? He was upset, like I said.
Yeah.
He wanted him to make it better. And that's literally what he wanted to do. So it's literally like when a partner cheats and then you go, well, I'm not going to take him back. But really, what do you want? You want an apology, not me, just FYI. You want an apology. The person gives you an apology and you go, okay, it's okay if you come over, but we're not back together.
Right.
BS.
And
that's
funny,
literally what happened.
Right, it is what happened. And what's funny is he was going through marriage counseling through this time. So he's already in that psychological state. That he's dealing with.
But I'll take your phone calls.
Right. He said, don't take this as a reconciliation, but like, well, what do you want? He's like, you know, show me results.
Yeah.
Just like a relationship. Like, mm-hmm. prove to me that you're worthy of getting off the couch and coming back to the bedroom. That's basically, he said, well, if I have to sing for supper, mm-hmm. You know, he'll sing for supper, sir. He understands.
Yeah. And that's why I think even Claire, Claire's comment was so spot on. Like, to me, her confined aggression of telling him to seduce him. What's the line? I don't even know if I can do the quote.
She said, do what you have to do. I did what I have to do. Yeah. Now you do what you have to do. Seduce him. Cut out your heart and put it in his effing hands. So, you know what? And this is a revelation.
She is done playing games.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. There was a reality check for her when she had to go visit Megan. And she went to go visit Megan. Megan, I guess, is trying to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just really in a bad space, obviously. You can see her. She looks like death warmed over, sitting and staring out the window. Mm-hmm. And
she blames Claire.
And mm-hmm. she blames Claire. And secondly, Claire, even they were, I don't really, how they were using her or whatever, or she, even though she feels used, I mean, she called in on the show of her own volition. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of like...
See, and I completely disagree. I think
she did call on the show on her own volition.
I agree. But I think there's a big difference between calling and then being manipulated by someone who is so much smarter and so much more sophisticated.
Correct.
Because you knew from the very beginning, because obviously they must have done their due diligence.
Yeah.
They knew from the very beginning that she was unstable. Of all things to go through, to literally have as your spokesperson for a sexual assault bill, who has in fact been sexually assaulted, to have someone that you know is mentally unstable. Yeah. Not we suppose or we presume, we actually know and have facts that she's mentally unstable.
Right.
And to actually use that and manipulate that. And that's why I think that there were scenes that led up to Claire crying on the stairwell.
Well,
the first
exactly.
scene, the
Go
first
ahead.
Scene when Megan spills her pills
all over the floor.
Because right before then, she asked Meacham, did she seem okay? Because she kind of seemed a little manic. Yeah. Manic. Fast forward, you know, obviously you're pushing her against the wall, so forth and so on. But then in the room, the way that she's obviously, just like you said, close to death, and arguably, again, what happens when you're close to death? You speak the truth.
Yeah.
And it's from a sense of clarity.
Yeah.
And she goes, I was getting better before you.
Right.
You did this to me.
Yeah.
Every time I take a pill, I see his face.
Right.
The next face I see is yours.
Right.
So she has now equated her with her rapist.
Right.
Basically, in essence, she's saying, you violated me.
Right. Exactly.
I was getting better, and now you have violated me. There was a moment when Claire, and she does this thing that is brilliant, and I honestly had not noticed it before. I watched with my sister.
Yeah.
It's almost like she's pushing the emotion down. And notice in that scene, she's on the bed, she kind of does a left-right with her chin. It's almost like she can feel the emotion coming up,
right.
and she's kind of shaking it off, almost like it's a demon.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
And she shakes it off, and notice, unlike Claire, even her words aren't authoritative. She goes, well, have we ever heard Claire say,
Right. No, she's very, very...
You guys mentioned in last episode that Claire sees Megan, herself in Megan. So, in a way, she feels like she didn't do her due diligence of helping her out and giving her a false sense of protection. Even though she did call in,
mm-hmm.
Claire convinced her that, I'm the vice president's wife. We will protect you. Which is why she proceeded to move forward with the press, with being the face of the bill and so forth.
Right.
So she didn't do what she said she would. And it's not, even though we compare her to Frank at the same time, they are very different because there are things that she has gone through, even coming from a very wealthy family, that Frank hasn't. And she has shaped herself from the bad that she's gone through to be who she is today.
Right.
So any reminder of that brings back every single thing that she has done, obstacles she has crossed to get to where she is.
Okay, so let's take all of that into consideration that we've just been discussing and fast forward back to when she tells Frank to take cut your heart out and put it in his effing hands.
Yeah.
She has gone through
mm-hmm.
all these things, and when she cried on the stairs was right after Lady Walker told her, you're a good person. That was probably the most, it was like looking in a mirror. And this is how you've come across, but you've manipulated perception and people's perception into thinking that you're a good person when you know you're really not. When you know you really have evil intentions, so to speak, you have nobody else's good interests at heart, or nobody's best interest at heart besides your own. It's beyond self-interest. They're actually vultures, and they're actually preying on people. You know, it's beyond just, well, of course you have to look out for yourself. Mm-hmm. That's the key to survival. Mm-hmm. They are beyond survival. They're preying. And for Lady Walker to tell her she's a good person because she's actually convinced her, they've actually manipulated everybody's minds into thinking that they're good people. Just like how Frank had the interview with Isla,
mm-hmm.
and like you said, Sophia, 5, 10, 20 years from now in the annals of history, mm-hmm. you'll be able to look back and say, well, the vice president actually mm-hmm. supported the president,
mm-hmm.
and that's one of the reasons why they recruited Jackie. They needed Jackie to be the bad guy,
mm-hmm.
so Jackie could whip the votes for impeachment, and Frank would be supporting. He's like, well, why can't you do it? She's like, look, I'm three doors down,
mm-hmm.
I can't.
Mm-hmm.
He has to go in clean, and he understood that. Whenever I watch this show, and you guys might feel some of the same, I feel like I'm watching old Roman times, like the guys in the mm-hmm. Senate who walk mm-hmm. around with the robes, mm-hmm. and they're constantly conspiring, like to a whole nother level. Mm-hmm. Like Frank hasn't met with everyone. Now he's met with Kern and promised him Secretary of, well, he alluded to, and he alluded, well, if I were president, and finally, Kern catches on. Now, this is just that little nuance is something that Frank would have caught immediately. It took him like 3 times before Kern even realized what Frank was saying. And he was like, wait a minute. Like, if you were president, okay, now I get what you're alluding to. Of course, he can't come out and say anything. He hasn't come out and said anything to anybody. Mm-hmm. He hasn't come out and said anything to Catherine Durant. He hasn't come out and said anything. But people, they're not stupid. Mm-hmm. It's like, figure it out.
And go ahead, Emma.
I think a lot of people, the reason why they're siding with Frank, not because they like him, not because they believe in him, it's because they don't want to be, you know, on the losing side. And they know Walker is going down. We've said it many times. The ship is sinking. There's no saving it.
Right.
So is it wise to go against Frank or just to join his team? Because, you know, ultimately he is going to be the president.
I completely agree with you. And this is a mini prediction for season 3. Some of those people, to me, who have willingly and consciously made a deal with the devil, for right now, that's what I'm going to call Frank.
Yes, and the hellhounds.
Exactly. it's going to bite them in the ass, and they're going to literally be like, "Oh, but that's not what I meant."
Right.
That's exactly what you meant, because just like you said, nobody forced them to.
Right.
He basically presented to them. They then thought about it and almost kind of were like, "Ooh, yes, that's what I want."
Right.
Right. So I totally agree with you. It's because there was this sinking ship. It's also because he's offering them something they wouldn't otherwise have.
Right.
So even, let's say, with Kearns, I think the reason that Kearns was so important is because Frank is the one who prevented him from getting Secretary of State. So that's brilliant. But number two, it's not that he was offering him Secretary of State. He was offering him an even better position that was even more closely aligned with who he was. So he knows, even if Garrett sails through this with flying colors, he will never be Secretary of Treasure. And he will never be bigger than what he is today.
Right.
But with Frank, Frank can allow you to be bigger and better. However, there's a price. And I feel like no one at present, other than maybe Durant, you saw her have a moment where, to me, her wheels actually turned. But for them, and maybe Jackie as well. But for most people, I feel like they're not asking, what's the price? What am I giving up here to, quote unquote, get what I want?
I don't think they're, in the position, like, you know, the majority whips, the Secretary of State, to really be asking those questions. They're just happy to be progressing up and moving up. So to them, that promise is good enough. But for someone who is already there at the top, and, you know, they're going to be like, okay, hold on a second. What is this going to cost me? And what are the consequences of me taking that position?
No, I totally agree with you, and it makes me think of the question that Thaddeus asked us, as well as the viewers, a couple of episodes ago, power versus money,
right?
And what's the saying? Power corrupts absolutely?
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Right? And then people always say, and then money is
the
devil's playground or something? I'm not good with
money's the root of all evil.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Perfect. Right.
Oh, the love of money is root of all. Right. But it's been condensed to the love of money.
So both of those. So arguably, to me, that's what's going on here.
Right.
Because we keep having this duality between power and money. But both of them seem to both be leading to a negative end.
Right.
However, juxtapose it with the difference between Frank again and Walker. We all have choices. We all, every single action we take, have to ask ourselves the pro and the con.
Right.
And regardless of where you are, to me, saying like, oh, well, let's say you have $5 and I want $5. So I steal the $5 and I go, oh, well, it's because I didn't have $5.
Right.
No, that's not a valid reason. I made a choice. So if I should say I stole the $5 from you because I valued me not having $5 more than you having it.
Right.
I think, I think I'm like falling into their cult. There is a certain aspect of Claire and Frank that I adamantly respect. And the reason being is maybe not to everyone else, but to us, they are real.
Right.
And basically, in essence, what they're saying is Walker was not fit to lead.
Right.
I'm actually fit to lead. And the reason I'm fit to lead is the fact that I got here.
The fact that I'm able to even get in this position shows that I'm more qualified to be here than you are. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you should be here.
Exactly.
You should be the president.
Exactly. Right.
So there's no way that I should be able to pull this off.
Right.
Everybody should be your loyal servants.
Especially because you're a good guy. Because right. basically, in essence, what he's saying, and to me, you know, after, you know, Walker read the letter, and basically Walker was saying, you know, part of me believes you, part of me doesn't. And again, Frank is brilliant because he sprinkles truth.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He does lie.
And then the truth that he tells is so vulnerable. And so something, who would admit that they should have shot their father?
You know,
which
Frank,
I don't think is a true story.
Oh, I totally thought it was a true story. I'm a dork.
You know, I totally
thought it was a true story.
You know what's funny about that is because he mentions he said the stories about his father before. He said a story about his father at the church before. At the church, he lied about his father, which is really funny. Mm-hmm. But of course, he prays to himself for himself. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't matter. This guy, I believe, in this moment, because Claire told him what she told him, she said, cut your heart out and put it in his effing hands. That meant... you got to come real
expose
with this guy
soul.
And be make yourself vulnerable. She actually gave him a tip on one of her tools of how she operates because she's very much like that. But that actually makes you more powerful. It's like being the rapper who can talk crap about yourself. Look at Eminem. He's talked so much crap about himself that he can go off about anybody. Nobody else can say anything about this guy. Mm-hmm. Plus,
well,
he's talented. It's kind of the same thing.
Vulnerability out there for people to
exactly
relate to.
Well,
but then you're using that against them.
And then he actually took it one step further and wrote a confessional note that he knows Walker is not going to use
because
Walker is too much integrity.
Exactly.
He's using his own integrity, his own character against him as a weapon. He's like, this guy's not going to do it. There's the total brain, you know what?
Yeah.
He completely screwed him.
Yeah.
So this guy, oh my gosh, Frank Underwood, he, you know, I like where Gary Walker was going and, you know, bringing Linda back and using her to try to strike a deal with Tusk. Mm-hmm. He was actually getting on the right page as far as starting to formulate some kind of plan,
mm-hmm.
you know, to, you know, he can actually, he says, you know, have Tusk go ahead, convince him to go ahead and confess. And when they subpoenaed him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he was going to offer him a pardon. And that's the one power that a president has that nobody else has.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say he messed up because if he really wanted to and that was the right path to take, offering his word to Tusk, that's not enough.
But the funny thing is it was. Tusk took the deal.
Yeah.
So I hear you because they have that conversation.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he still has no other options. And he realizes to a certain extent that... it's almost like the problem is they're all little kids who have been, whose feelings have been hurt, right? And I'm going to take it a little bit different, though. Really what it is, and we don't know Garrett's backstory, and we'll probably never know, but to me, Garrett probably had a dad who was not loving. That's why he was so connected to Tusk, right? So Tusk, to me, symbolizes his dad. Frank symbolizes more of like his older brother or more of like a more, he saw him more as an equal. The reason that he had to kind of break the tie with Tusk is because in his mind, he thought he was growing up.
Yeah.
Right? He had to basically disassociate himself with his dad and strike out on his own, right?
Yeah.
Stand up on his own. The problem was Frank slid in there because when you do that, you have a space missing.
Right.
So now that's when you kind of look more for an equal, mm-hmm. right? More like a brother, and that's what he thought he had in Frank.
Right.
The problem is.
That confidant.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
but
so.
But again, I think that for me, the plan was solid. Offer him a pardon. Tell the truth. And again, I think it's because Garrett really is that wide-eyed president. Like,
right.
just tell the truth. Like,
well,
it's all going to be okay. Tell the truth.
If him and Tusk would have stuck together,
yeah.
you know, this is the goes back to the old saying, pride comes before the fall. And when he had this meeting with Remy last episode,
well,
Remy told him, look, all I've been trying to do is keep the peace.
Mm-hmm.
He said, all you have to do was, what did he say? Swallow your pride,
uh-huh.
but you
uh-huh.
let your pride get in the
uh-huh.
way, pretty much. And that's what Tusk has done. He's been trying to battle Frank. Now, mind you, Frank is prideful as well. But the difference between Frank and Tusk is that Tusk wears his pride more on his shoulders. Frank will, he'll submit in your face, but that's not the cornerstone of pride. You know, the cornerstone of pride is I am such and such, why do I pay you six attorneys to blah, blah, blah.
But they were incompetent. And I'm not really a fan of how they represent lawyers on this show.
But he had to lose. So they had to make him weak. Anyway, they had to be a weak legal team. The bottom line is he is a very proud man. Frank is a pragmatist. He's looking at the end goal. What do I have to do? If I have to take a loss here and there to win the entire war, I will do that. It pisses him off when he doesn't get some of his, like, Secretary of State or, you know, there's certain big goals. But now he's like, I'm after the presidency. Now he probably was after the presidency for even wanting to get the Secretary of State nod.
And that's what you guys said. Remember, I never made the connection. Remember how I was like, why do you care? And you guys were like, because he wants to be president. I was like, no, he doesn't.
Right. So he was like, there's no way. You know what? When we took this Sophia and looking at this Sophia, now from last season, she'd be like, what?
But I still didn't see it.
Yeah.
I'll be that honest. I still didn't see it.
He was on a tear. Yeah. After he didn't get that nod, he was on a tear. And I think he was probably, his end goal was to be president anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now he
just that soon.
Yeah. And it was just, now he was like, I'm out for blood because people stabbed me in the back. They were supposed to be my friend or supposed to follow up, not my friend, but follow up on their end of the deal. So he just went on a rampage, basically.
Yeah, and he sometimes miscalculates people, but normally Frank has a very good sixth sense in figuring people out, and that's one of his strengths versus Tusk, is positioning himself around people who are going to take the fall for him. Remy is kind of like Stamper to Tusk, but Remy will never give himself up or sacrifice himself for Tusk.
Remy's loyal to Remy. In the final analysis, as you can see with the deal he made with Frank, he's like, he wants to be on the winning side as well. He's a strategist, you know, which is how him and Jackie see eye to eye. They're both strategists and make up their own minds. You know, if he was a prideful person, he would have stuck with Tusk.
And not only that, though, I think, and it's something that you just said about Tusk being prideful, I think the big difference is, and Frank kind of alluded to it in the hallway, is they play different games, right? So before, Frank likes war. He excels in chaos. Tusk was a business person.
Right.
Yes, he was maneuvering in politics, but remember the first time we saw him? He literally said that literally he was on the phone with six different people in six different countries in six different transactions, and they basically have to ask him yes or no
questions
that only can elicit a yes or no response.
Right.
Right? That's how he maneuvered.
Right.
He has completely taken away all of his time and energy from that. Now got sucked into Frank's world where now he has to have full-on conversations.
Right.
Isn't that a BS use of his time? I'm going to run the math. I have to. He, has $39 billion, right?
No, speaking of the math, he's not worth $42-plus billion anymore.
I know, he's 39.
He has a shrinking market,
right? shrinking market cap. Yeah. Right? But again, so I'm just going to round numbers. If he's worth $39 billion, arguably his hourly rate is probably like $5,000.
Right.
Let's just put that into perspective.
Right.
That's why he goes, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, because it's a waste of his time.
Right.
He has been wasting his time and energy on Frank.
Right.
Not because Frank is not a formidable opponent, but because it's a poor use of his time. And that's why Frank in the hallway says to him, you are a businessman. Haven't you been so successful by mitigating risk? That's what he says to him.
True.
And he basically says, we should have been talking to one another from the beginning. Screw Garrett. You did all of this because you wanted a position in the White House. I am giving you that position in the White House because nobody can do politics better than I can do politics. But you can do business.
Right.
And we can work together. And even though in that moment, Tusk was like, F off.
Right.
Obviously, at the end of the day, Tusk was like, wait a minute. Why? Because you can't deny Francis's resolve.
Right.
He saw it.
Yeah,
even in the same point that all of a sudden he offers me a pardon, and then he pulls it back like that was janky. Like the
president said, it must be Frank. He said it must be Frank.
It doesn't matter. That is janky on Garrett, though. You do not offer someone a pardon and then pull. Sorry, you go down with the ship. Then you can't offer this man who was your mentor and confidant for 20 years. And then side with this new person. Why? Because you got a buddy? And I know I'm talking out of the opposite.
No, but see, I think that's the reason why he went ahead and confessed and spilled the beans on everything. Because that was his way of telling Frank, I'm on your team. Because after he left the hallway, it was like, I think he really wanted to side with Frank.
Uh-huh. I think so too.
But his pride wouldn't let him do it.
That's why he had to make that snarky comment.
Right. So, you know, and Frank was really funny. He's like, you know, I hate, what was that?
Oh, Puccini's such a downer. I prefer something more uplifting.
Optimistic.
Optimistic.
Right. Right. That was awesome.
He walks to his own tune.
Right.
No, it's Hail to the Chief.
Yeah, it's Hail to the Chief. Yeah.
Sorry. Yes, you're right. Sorry about that.
That's his own tune.
I'm sorry.
That's his
own. I didn't realize. I'm so, like, taking her at face value. I'm like, oh, my bad, Emma. That's what you meant.
Yeah, so... Where should we go from here? It's just a lot.
It is a lot. But I mean, I think that at the end of the day, and you already alluded to it, and now it's not too late. I mean, one of the best ways, just a kind of quick prediction, to kind of figure out storylines if you want to, is to go on IMDb or to go on Google and see who's back for season three. I choose not to do that because I really do kind of like to be surprised.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
do that either. I'm going
to
wait.
But for those of you who kind of can't wait, that's the best way to do it. Emma, 2 episodes ago, so that would have been episode 11, alluded to something. So for those of you who like spoilers, listen to episode 11. There's a little bit of a spoiler, but just a tiny, tiny little one. It's a good one.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm interested to see what's going to happen season 3 and where they're going to take the story.
Right.
Because... Oh, who becomes the vice president now?
I don't know. Excellent question.
That's what I want to know.
That's going to be...
My gut says
is it
it's Birch someone that we don't know.
Is it Bob Birch who's this?
Oh, that would be a good one. I think it's someone we've not met yet. I don't know why.
I don't think he'll put anyone that's currently in office just because he has his differences with them. And he wants to keep Durant and Jackie where they are because he needs them there.
Right.
And who else is qualified to be in that position?
Well, if you guys want to give us your thoughts, give us a call, 424-256-1633, on who you guys think the VP will be come season 3.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, or you can go on iTunes. Just go to iTunes.com, House of Cards, After Buzz TV, and you will find all of our podcasts from season 1 as well as season 2. And what you can do is you can comment and you can join the conversation. So let us know who you think Frank is going to pick as his VP for season 3 by going to iTunes.com, House of Cards, After Buzz TV. Rate, comment, subscribe, and always tell a friend. And if you like what we're talking about, 5 stars, please. Again, iTunes, House of Cards, After Buzz TV. Rate, comment, subscribe.
Yes. Poor Stamper.
Oh, F him. Sorry.
F Stamper?
Yes.
I think, they obviously set Stamper up. Like, you can tell they're writing him out and out, getting him out, writing him out of the storyline.
They've pretty much transitioned out all the old school, and bringing in new school.
Fresh blood for Frank.
Is what Frank needs. First of all, they're, I'm not going to say more sophisticated, but technology savvy and more fast in thinking on their feet. Compared to Stamper. But at the same time, they could be molded into how he wants them to be. So it's going to be interesting to see who he brings on, because I don't think Seth is, even though he's qualified and capable of handling the job by himself, he needs more people.
Seth is diabolical. There's this eeriness to this guy that is so in your face. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that, you know, when just referencing back to the meeting that Remy had with him and Tusk, and he was in the room. It was three of them. Yeah. And he tells Remy, you've been playing both sides, but he's more than comfortable knowing that Seth is playing both sides. Mm-hmm. So Seth is extremely formidable for a Remy on that level. Like, this guy has convinced Tusk that he's not playing both sides. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that Remy's told him, like...
But I think this is the difference is that I think that because Tusk didn't really know Seth, even in the same way that Tusk said to Remy, like, I understand and I respect the fact that you had to, like, look out for yourself, he just doesn't respect that he thinks that Frank is the better... Of the better of the two of them.
Right.
Seth, because he doesn't have an emotional attachment to, he can understand how Seth could see Frank and basically be like, oh, because technically there's a difference between Seth really sided with Frank instead of Remy, right. Not Raymond Tusk.
Right.
Because he didn't really have access to him. So he could understand that.
Well, I like how Jackie, ruled.
Oh, and I don't.
Put the writing on the wall for Remy. And you don't like that?
I like it. But what I don't like, and to me, it kind of goes back, because even though I agree with you, last episode, I think I said stepchild, and you said it's more like an adopted son. I do think it's like that, but there's a certain aspect that I don't like. I don't like how Remy is making decisions, and I don't like the new way that before, I feel like in season one, he had more stature. There was like more mystery to him.
Right.
So I kind of respected him, right. If that makes sense. Now I'm kind of like, dude, do you not know what you're doing?
Well, his status has definitely been diminished.
You're right. And the fact of even that he says, and I mean, it's foreshadowing in my mind, but the fact that he said, I slaved away for 8 years, they choose words carefully on this show, right? No, then I guess I'm the asshole who has to go here. But to be like, I slaved away, do you know what I mean? And to be within Frank's inner circle, the only African-American there, set in the nation's capital, in the capital.
Right.
Says something. So again, he went from, and then even the way he says, he's like, Frank begged me to stay, and she's like, I doubt that very much. I think Frank really did probably beg him to stay, as much as Frank can.
Right.
But again, he went from potentially being the new Stamper to now being what? Because to me, when he said, I need a job, he basically was like, oh, what are you offering? Like, and he basically was like, and he asked, like, a job in the White House. Her answer was so cryptic, which to me said no. She goes, commensurate with your loyalty? That means you're not White House worthy, and your experience.
And Seth refers to that in the prior episode where he says, are you coming? Should I hold the elevator down? Oh, I guess you have to go down the stairs.
You'll
be taking the stairs, which takes longer, obviously, to go from the penthouse down to the street level versus taking an elevator, just straight down.
And through the lobby, through the front door versus the back door.
I think Jackie, they plan to give him a job, a position.
Well, they better.
You got to remember, he's... We'll see.
They're going to give him a position, just not in the White House.
What's the term that Frank said?
He's going to have to sing for his supper. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to earn his way back in. Because there's a difference between... Frank would have respected him more if he chose Frank before the ship was sinking, because he respected Frank. He flip-flopped because all of a sudden he was like, oh, crap, I think Raymond is losing. In Frank's mind, he should have realized that from before. Like, the ship didn't need to sink for him to know that Frank is the master of the universe.
Yeah, but at the same time, in Remy's defense, I believe Remy, like he said, he had no loyalty. He was getting paid. He was working a job. He was still working for Glendon Hill, and he was on a payroll.
But Jackie brings it up, and I think it's valid. When Jackie goes, you keep telling yourself that. It's never been about the money for you. And I said it last episode, and Remy says it. He's like, oh, I could just leave all this. If it was really about the money, Remy could go somewhere else to some consulting firm outside of D.C. and make a boatload of money.
She did say he would wither up if he went somewhere else and wasn't involved.
Being in the position that he is now, Frank can't afford someone jumping ships. And at the point, he has the highest position of power.
So basically, if somebody comes along and offers him more money, it's like, oh, you're going to bounce now? Mm-hmm. So yeah,
but it does make sense. But
that
he has to make calculated decisions with Remy, because he does jump ships so often that Frank has the highest position of power in the United States right now. So he can't afford having a liability on his hand who's going to potentially jump ship while he's a president.
Well, here's the thing. Also, remember at that time, I wouldn't really call it jumping ship. He got a promotion. He was the press secretary for
the majority whip.
Yeah,
I don't think that
I don't
ship.
You know, it's
I feel like
you got to
flip flop with the whole Tusk thing.
No, with Tusk.
Yeah.
But he's gone back and forth where he had an argument with Claire while she was running the nonprofit.
The CWI.
Mm-hmm. And then went against Claire. And then, we see him.
No, but that was really Jillian. Remember?
He cut the funding.
Yeah, they cut the funding, but it was because of Jillian. That was something because of Jillian.
At the beginning of the season, right?
No, that was last season.
Right, the beginning of season one. That was the whole thing because they didn't get Secretary of State. That's why he cut the funding.
It wasn't because of that. They cut the funding because
Why weren't they offering it to another company? It was. It had something to do with CWI and Suncorp was offering the money to, I believe.
Yeah, I think it had something to do with CWI. Something with Suncorp.
And then Frank had to step in and then to.
Their stance on using something ecological or something like that. It was something.
Okay, I'll stay out of this.
And then she had.
Are you saying because Frank didn't get Secretary of State and couldn't secure something?
Exactly. Had to do, and then the second. Remember, and then they got. And then he offers her money, and she doesn't turn it. She turns it
so
down.
So you're saying it was all linked.
Yeah, in. and then secondarily, it was. Remember how.
Oh, that's why she was upset, saying your failures are affecting my.
Exactly. Yeah. Remember, and then remember the bill, the clean water bill, of the river, right? And then that's when Jillian came in, and basically she offered Remy something, and remember Remy was like, okay, cool, we get to take pictures of the water wells in Africa, and Jillian turned them away. I don't know, maybe my sequence is wrong.
I remember it was connected, but I still think that it has something
to
do with...
But Remy helped her. Remy then, ironically, Remy actually is, if anything, has been more loyal to Claire than to Frank.
Because he
offered her to go to his room.
That went to me again and again, and I think that Thaddeus has been alluding to this, and I think I've alluded to it as well, and you probably have as well, Emma. To me, sex in the show has way more to do with power than actually anyone wanting anyone.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? For the aesthetics of it. So I think that when he approached her, that's why he said, oh, I have the presidential suite. Like, you know, I never got to stay here before when I was just your staffer. Like, all of those things to me means it's more of a power move. I want what Frank has.
Right.
And anyone could almost be slotted in there.
Right.
Not so much as I actually desire you. And I think that's always the analogy, even in so much as with the first Secret Service guy. That's why she said, you didn't see me.
Right.
It's because you hated Frank, so you wanted what Frank had because you hated him.
Right.
Because then that's the ultimate in male, and you can speak to this, but in terms of male ego, that's how you get to a man. It's through his woman. Sometimes it has nothing to do with the woman. It has everything to do with taking something.
From the guy.
From the guy.
Right. And that happens, as we can see, in House of Cards. Do you feel like the Adam Galloway, that effect that had the same, it was the same kind of thing? Or do you feel like it was more because he was really in love with her?
Yeah.
So that kind of mitigates that as far as the power thing over Frank. Because Adam didn't really care about Frank. He was really into Claire. Mm-hmm. He was in love with Claire.
Yeah.
Do you guys feel like Stamper deserved what he got?
Hell yeah.
Really?
I'm literally beyond. Because there comes a point when you can only say so many times, like, oh, well, I protected you, I this, I that, I that. Bull. Because at the end of the day, what happened at first? So she got arrested for prostitution. Big deal. Yes, she tried to blackmail him, so that was bad. But he should have just, like, paid her. Or even on some levels, I think that getting rid of her then would have been way better than this torture. This, like, weird, sick, twisted, like, you want me to read to you. I can have a friend. I can't have a friend. I can be part of the fellowship. I cannot be part of the fellowship. And in that moment in the car, didn't you think he was going to kill her?
Mm-hmm. I thought so.
I didn't.
Oh, I totally did. Because he said,
where was he going?
Goes, because he goes, she goes, are you going to hurt me? And he goes, if you tell me the truth. And she said something and he goes, stop lying to me. So she's like, oh, crap. If he doesn't believe me, he just told me.
I thought she was being overly paranoid.
You know
what I didn't
mean?
Think he was
but
gonna
technically,
kill her.
But again, the words. She literally goes, are you going to hurt me?
Right.
He says, if you don't lie to me. She then says something else, and he goes, stop lying.
I can't believe he didn't see this coming. You know, when you keep someone, and I'm
she's
not
a prisoner,
comparing her
pretty
to an animal or anything, but when you keep a dog on a leash in a cage for so long, the second you let the dog off the leash, it attacks the owner because it doesn't recognize any any boundaries or protection.
Right.
So, and especially the fact that she's in love with someone, love is so powerful and it makes you do things that you have no control over.
Yes,
and
she
had to, throw out her girlfriend who she's telling her, I hate you and I don't want to be with you, just to get her out of the house to keep her safe.
Yeah, because she thinks that he might do something to her, which you
no,
never know.
He
might
knows.
Have.
This is the problem is, think about it again, and you brought it up with the whole Peter reference last episode. She actually knows what these people are capable of.
Right.
So it's not like she thinks it can happen. She knows how they solve problems.
Right.
You think she doesn't know that it was Dem who killed off Zoe? It's so obvious.
Yeah. But in the woods,
Zoe was chasing her for a story, and all of a sudden she gets killed, and she can't leave the house or talk to anyone.
She knows also the whole Peter Russo thing.
She does know about Peter Russo. Yeah.
So but no,
does,
literally yeah. when they were in the woods, when she jumped out of the car, I was like, yes. Literally when Samper is like calling for her in the woods, I screamed at the TV, pick up a stick, and hit him.
Where was he taking her anyway? Were they just
relocating? I don't even think he thought about it yet.
Because of the Lisa thing?
Yep.
Because of
the hacker thing.
No,
I think he was relocating her because of the hacker thing. Because the fact that the hacker was like, I know about Rachel Posner. She lives at blah, 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 blah.
Oh, that's right, because they met with the hacker. This is one part of the story that I did not appreciate was the whole hacker thing, which I know they're going to probably bring it back in season 3 and have him be a thorn in Frank's side some kind of way in the whole scenario. But, you know, we talked about this, you know, off camera. I wasn't moved by this storyline. It would have been better, I feel, if they would have presented an image or, you know, just planted a seed instead of developing a storyline. And the storyline and the manner, him and his cartoon chinchilla and his seedy little seedy little. And then Stamper has got this guy who's the director of cyber terrorism, and he's kind of cartoonish too. It didn't even fit with the other characters in the story for me.
I agree.
I wish they would axe it, guys, please.
Well, they have to because he's after Frank now. Doug is gone. He doesn't have a tail to chase anymore. I'm sure Lucas has told him enough information for him to know about Doug, to know about Frank, to know about Zoe and all of them, to get his next victim, who he's going to target, and who's left? Frank.
Well, that would be interesting to see what happens. I guess we've discussed predictions throughout the whole show, pretty much. I really am really the thing that I most want to know is who is going to be the next vice president, if it's going to be a throwaway role. And
Claire Underwood.
Speaking of Claire, though,
that would be
I thought that the hallway scene was so symbolic, and literally right when they got to almost the door before the door.
Yeah.
I literally heard Frank saying location, location, location. Because look at who was literally right at the door, right? It was, I think, Birch, Womack,
Durant
mm-hmm. on the left side,
mm-hmm.
the two Republican guys, right? And then it was the doorway. Meacham. He walked through the door, mm-hmm. and it was Meacham. And then he walks in with Claire.
Right.
Right? So the location to power. He always says location, location, location.
Right.
I thought it was emotional and symbolic, the fact that Claire gave him a gift, even though he doesn't like birthday gifts,
right.
and that the gift was his class ring, because he did seem nervous without it. He seemed not complete.
Right.
However, I question the fact that she didn't go in with him. I understand emotionally why she didn't. I understand that she was giving him that moment, but is that symbolic? We have, in the last 3 episodes, seen Claire act very unlike Claire. And she seems like she's losing a little bit of her edge, and she's being a little bit more introspective of what they've had to do to get to the end goal.
Well, if we're just building on the capitalizing on that, remember that Claire's battlefield has not been in the offices for the most part. She has not been. She's played her role. Mm-hmm. So as the wife, as the matriarch of the Underwoods, so to speak. So her not going in is fitting, because she's not going to be in most of those meetings.
Okay.
She's not going to be in there. So she wanted Frank to go in there. Of course, she's going to go in there and check it out after. But go ahead and soak it in. Get your mind right. Get your game face right. Because season 3, you're going to be the president, and you're going to be a bigger target than ever.
Okay.
So, you know, that's why he has to go in there. He soaks it in. He tosses Garrett's chair out of the way. And it's not a big enough deal that he's the most powerful man in the world. He has to stand at the desk, you know, because he's sucking in all the power. And she knows him. That was all psychological. Mm-hmm. She's go ahead. What does she say? Breathe it in or soak it all in? Because he needs that. Yeah. He needs to go in there and feel that power. He has to. That's just his nature.
And the reason why I just, jokingly said Claire, but at the same time, I kind of, it had some truth to it, because what is she going to do? She can't go back and work at the CW.
No, she's going to be the First Lady of the United States of America.
But she's okay. Different. She's not like Garrett's wife, where, you know, she was kind of like on the sideline. She's going to want a position where she is going to make a difference. As you could see when they're doing the inauguration, and they call up Claire to hold the Bible. Compare her on stage with Garrett's wife and her. She's dressed in black, very, I want to say kind of like mysterious, but she has a darkness and...
the black gloves, so she doesn't have to touch the Bible.
And also kind of time out. But, did you notice how they painted the Bible? Like, yeah. All this small farce.
Right.
But no, I think the gloves were more to represent that she's going to be the one doing more of the dirt. Because she can't have any yeah.
Interesting.
Any fingerprints. Well, you got to
remember.
Anything.
You got to remember that she does most of her also when she they do most of her making Francis buck up, mm-hmm. and just it was in the bedroom. It was at home. Like, so, it was never in the office. You know, Frank goes to work and he deals with whatever
but
he has
now,
to deal with.
Technically, their home and office mm-hmm. are one. Literally and figuratively with the White House.
That's true.
So I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
But I think that dynamic is going to be a lot different.
It is going to be a lot different. I wonder what Meacham's bedroom is going to be.
Ooh.
Or,
where the
or
kids,
whether or not...
The
oh, wait, I'm making little predictions. Like, whether or not the CWI is going to come back in. Like, there's
certain
things...
You think Jillian may come back into play?
I don't know. Because, I mean, just talking about what you're talking about, like, what are her platforms going to be? Like, I think the difference is, and again, I'm going to go back to, and I'm going to make it Hillary and Michelle Obama. I think they have redefined what it is to be a first lady.
Right.
Right? And I think that there's something to be said about a team, and we said it time and time again. There's a difference between two halves and two whole individual people who come together.
Right.
And I think that's what she showed herself to be when she was, you know, the wife of the vice president.
Yeah.
So I feel like that will continue. However, I feel like season one was, they were disconnected to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And it's because the end goal was unclear. Season two, they were completely in alignment. Again, they're deliberate. There has to be a reason that they're showing a little bit of the Ice Queen's shell breaking. And I think that Frank now is fully like, oh, I'm the master of the universe.
Right.
She, I think, is going to start to question things. And there's going to be a rift in the house.
That's a big prediction.
I'm predicting kids.
You're predicting kids?
Oh, that's yeah. So funny. Adopting, having, I don't know, something.
I'm predicting.
Time out. Why? For strategic purposes or just because they want kids?
No, strategic purposes.
Okay.
For the re-election.
Okay.
Possibly. That's the only reason I think I could see them having kids.
She has adopting. To. She has to prove the baby killer and all of those negative images that have been painted for her and passing the bill. She has to come across somewhat human.
Familial. And mm-hmm. family support. Okay. I predict more people are going to die next year.
The inevitable.
Right. So until next season, where can we find you, ladies?
You guys can find me on GQJedi.com, Instagram, Twitter, at Rilla McKay.
You can find me on Twitter at Sophia Stanley.
And you can find me on GQJedi.com and Twitter and Instagram at Club Thaddeus. Until next time, House of Cards fans, after buzzing around the Atmos buzzing fear, talk to y'all later. Peace.
Executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff. We would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.